This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 437 in the series. This session shares the Franklin Mass School Committee Budget Subcommittee meeting held on Thursday, January 14, 2020. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. Some of the school committee and central office personnel were in the municipal building. The remainder of the committee was remote via conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distancing requirement of this pandemic period. The show notes contain links to the meeting agenda and to my notes. So let's listen to this segment of this budget subcommittee meeting of January 4, 2021.
All right, the time being 4:34, I call to order the January 14th, 2021 meeting of budget subcommittee. And anything yet? No. And I'll just read the governor's little blurb here. For Governor Baker's order suspending certain provisions of the open meeting law, 30A, section 20, the public will not be allowed to physically access this school committee subcommittee meeting. Members of the public can access the meeting via remote conference. The school committee reserves the right to implement additional remote participation procedures and will notify the public of these procedures as soon as practicable. And at this time, I'll do a roll call and then we'll see Jen D'Angelo. Roll call. Tim Keenan, not yet. And Ann Bergen here. Again, a reminder, we need to stop, hard stop at 5:30 because Dr. Hearn has another meeting to attend. So at this point, Sarah and Miriam, I'm going to turn the meeting over to you to give us sort of an update.
Sure. I will start. We have just an FY21 budget update and wanted to give you a sense of what we're hearing related to the second federal stimulus package. We're hearing that it will be 3.7 to 3.8 times greater than what we got for ESSER, which was about $123,000. So we're expecting about $450,000 to come in this second round of stimulus money. And I would be inclined, there are some things that I think we would want to do for the spring potentially, including things like renting tents again for outdoor learning spaces. But I think that one of the highest leverage areas that we could invest in would be pending the successful pilot of the DESE pool testing, continuing that pool testing into the spring of students. And we'll initially test staff as well. So that's kind of an update. Miriam, do you want to add anything to that?
Unmute. Oh yeah, I'm not muted. Okay, good. Sorry. No, I would just say that we're still waiting for further guidance from DESE as to allocations for that stimulus money. But agreed, I've heard the same 3.7 to 3.8 times the ESSER funding.
Okay. Good. Excellent. Is that it on the update? We're not getting any other money then, are we?
There is. No. There was an earmark from Senator Rausch's office, which I had sent a letter earlier this week asking the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education to release it to us. It's for a number of towns within the senator's district. And this is the second time we've asked for the release of funding. The first time, Miriam, you have the history on this, but it's related. There's sort of a catch in the way the legislation is worded, which is that if we're getting other funding, this funding can be appropriated in a different direction. So I'm anticipating that to be the response again, but we did request it from the department.
And how much, Sarah, would it be?
It was 250. Is that 250 per town or was it 250 split over all the towns?
It was 250 split over all the towns.
So I'm not sure what Franklin's share is, but okay. It was 250,000 split across multiple towns.
Excellent. Thank you. Tim's on his way.
I don't know about additional funding. I haven't heard anything else.
No, nor have I.
Tim should be waiting to be let in, I think. He said, sorry, he's on his way. So just
don't see him.
He's on his way, so if someone can look out for him.
Yeah, will do.
Okay, thanks. Okay, next.
In terms of FY22, we wanted to talk a little bit about the timeline of budget development with the budget subcommittee, as well as probably set some meeting dates in February. I guess I'm just really sensitive and mindful at the current moment about the facilities analysis subcommittee doing their work. And we typically have our budget presentation on the second meeting in February, but I was wondering if the budget subcommittee would be okay with pushing that out to probably early March, so the March 9th meeting. March 23rd starts feeling, for me personally, a little bit late for the budget presentation to be going out when we start talking about having the committee discuss the budget and then hold the public hearing and then take a vote. I guess it depends on how many meetings you feel that the full committee should have to discuss the budget, but I would request that we aim to present the budget on March 9th.
Let me get opinion. Jen, what do you think?
Whatever you think is best.
Tim, what are your thoughts?
I think probably the earlier the better.
Yeah. I would agree.
I think it's going to take a few iterations. I don't think.
Okay.
Like I think it, yeah, I'm not sure everybody's like going to be on the same page quickly.
Yeah, I think the more discussions the better. I think the earlier the better too. Yeah. Sounds good, Sarah.
So I guess then, so I would propose a presentation March 9th, which could have discussion. You typically haven't had discussion, yes, but you certainly could, because you get the information ahead of time in the packet, and committee members are pretty well informed about, you know, budget history and where we are through all of the workshops. And then another discussion on the 23rd of March. The public hearing would then be April 13th, which also gives you an opportunity for another discussion, especially after public input. And then the vote would potentially be on April 27th.
On April 27th. Good. Are there any, Sarah, any joint subcommittee meetings with the town council and the FinCom? Are those aren't scheduled now yet, are they?
I haven't seen anything scheduled. Okay. We typically meet with FinCom in April.
Okay.
So the April 27th is actually one meeting 2 weeks after we typically would do it, but okay. I think we'll need a little time.
Got it.
Just a quick question. So the budget that is being prepared, is it using an assumption that everything is going to be full and in person for the next school year?
Yeah. So that I think is the way we're looking at next year, is making plans as if we're full and in person. At that point, educators should be vaccinated. We should be hopefully well through vaccination of the general public. I was reading something this morning. I don't know that all children will be vaccinated until something like mid-fall. But if we continue with something like pool testing and our educators are vaccinated and the vaccine is working, then, you know, we're making plans for full and in person in the fall. And I think that's consistent elsewhere as well. I think it could change. I would be very disheartened if it were to change. I think kids need to be in school and are missing out. So we want to be planning in that direction. So what we have sent out so far from like preschool registration is based on, you know, kind of having a more normal schedule, back to regular schedule. And then we're gearing up for kindergarten registration in a couple weeks as well, and would be aiming for, full and in person.
Okay.
So we'll build the budget around that, which has major implications for staffing.
Yeah.
Compared to this year, not compared to normal years, but compared to this year.
Sarah, when do you meet with the administrative team to sort of get their priorities and all that? Is that something that's ongoing that you've been doing already?
Yeah, so we started that in December. Miriam sent out school-based budgets, and they started to work on where they are needing to allocate site-based funds. But we are also using we meet on Wednesdays. We're using our Wednesday meetings in January to do setting priorities and setting working together, looking at the district improvement plan and the portrait of a graduate around our goals. And this year looks different. There's a couple, I think, essential questions that we need to face. One is, all of which are brought about by the pandemic, which include what are some things that we're currently doing through the pandemic that we no longer need to do, will no longer need to do. What are some new things that we're doing as a result of the pandemic that we're going to need to plan for next year mm-hmm. that we wouldn't have typically planned for? And then even thinking pre-pandemic, what are some things that we should kind of discontinue? We may have been planning for them in the past, but should discontinue in order to prioritize student needs at this time? And is there anything that we're not doing that we should that we had plans for previously that we should be planning for going forward.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
And, I think the school committee's priority setting was helpful in terms of hearing, in particular, committee members relaying concern around social and emotional health and counseling staff and making sure students are supported there.
Good. Excellent.
Madam Chair, if I may, I participated in the FinCom meeting yesterday, and a couple of updates might be worthy of the schedule discussion you're having here. The next FinCom meeting is February 24th, at which Jamie figured he would have his first pass of the budget for FinCom review, which would then set up for sometime in March for that joint budget discussion.
Okay.
And the FinCom budget hearings are currently scheduled for April 28 and 29.
Thanks, Steve.
Glad to help.
Thank you.
Excellent. So, Sarah, you also wanted to make sure you scheduled February dates for us as a committee. Is that one of the things you wanted to do today?
Yeah, I know we set dates and I appreciate everybody kind of chiming in on availability in January, but I think that February is going to be a busier time for the budget development process.
Yeah.
And so I would propose, I don't know that we're going to need the 21st and 28th, but I would propose keeping the 2nd of February, which mm-hmm. we had scheduled.
Yeah.
And then setting maybe, Miriam, what do you think? Two additional dates in February and March or?
Yeah, I would look to that.
We're going to need some dates in March as well. So if the presentation Definitely. Is March 9th, looking and having a budget subcommittee meeting in between the 9th and the next school committee meeting, which is the
23rd.
But then we don't want to schedule it over school vacation, do we? Will that that week?
Oh, I was looking at March, but
Oh, I'm sorry, March. I'm looking. Okay. What about we've got one in February and then did you say we want more in February or?
I think if we had one the week of the 22nd or the week of March 1st, that would be helpful.
Okay. Okay, good. All right. So what's it look like for people the week of the 22nd of February, the week of March 1st?
I have my schedules with me. The email was helpful to send it via email because I just don't have both of my schedules with me.
Oh, okay.
We'll do that. All right. So I'll do that right after the meeting then. Okay. People to look at that. Very good.
Sorry, for Feb, what's the one that we've locked down on early Feb?
February 2nd.
February 2nd, Tim.
Feb 2nd. Okay.
Yeah.
And I should be good that week in late Feb that you just talked about as well, if we do. Okay.
Very good. And then I'll check with Jen.
Feb 2nd at 4:30, is that what we said?
Usually 4:30 works at any time from 4:30 on works for people. Yeah. Is that good?
Yeah, I can make that work. It's fine.
Okay. So I'll check with Jen. If you can tell me your availability, will you just send me an email? I can't hear.
What week?
The week of February 22nd and the week of March 1st. Any of your availability there? Tim said he's pretty free from 4:30 on that week of the 22nd. And I know I am. I don't know if you guys, well, you can let us know.
And I think I would suggest that we have budget subcommittee dates set up in between the school committee meeting dates. So the week of March 15th, the week of March 29th, just in case we need them in between, based on input and feedback and discussion from the committee.
Okay, so those weeks, so the 15th and the 29th. All right, so I'll put an email out and ask for availability for the week of the 15th and the 29th. For March. Okay, very good.
Okay, thank you.
I'll put that out to everybody, include Miriam this time too, so.
And okay. Then the other item that we had wanted to bring was related to community relations subcommittee and getting some input from the budget subcommittee about budget facts. Anne, do you want to talk about that?
Right. We just wanted to know, every budget season we put out information that we think is very important for the public to have. Anne-Marie Tracy is trying to find sort of creative ways to get that information out, but it's important that we sort of prioritize what we think is important information to get out. So that's one of the things we wanted to come from this meeting, is things that you think that traditionally when you look at this budget pack we had things like.
Do you want me to share my screen, Anne? I can bring it up.
Oh, good. Yeah. Thanks, Sarah. Yeah. So this is what we did last year. And then in the inside, what we had was, there we go. We had a section, obviously you can read it, data and facts, you know, where we are per pupil spending, information like that. So just sort of a fact base.
And we had talked at the community relations subcommittee to have a slightly different format, I think more graphics and images and pictures that could be kind of clicked on for more information.
And yeah, and links in there, and yeah, that it was too much text, so that's sort of the Franklin by the numbers. The next section, Sarah, was just to give a so that information. How about the next one? Now, then we had programs previously cut so people could see what we lost. Then we had the obviously the closing measures, what we need. Yeah, then obviously additional factors affecting the budget, impacts of further reductions, what's going to happen if we have to reduce them, so sort of like the impact of the budget. And then we had the timeline as well. On
I'm
the
not
back.
Sure where that is.
Oh, okay. Maybe we don't have it.
We took it off last year.
Okay. Yeah.
And put the links specifically and put more data instead.
Okay. There you go. That was it. Yeah. So in terms of, if people get a sense of the kind of information and the things that we want to get out to the public that would be prioritized, that we would do. So that's the, if you have some thoughts in addition to this, or change things, or what else you'd like to add, or what your priorities would be, that we would include. Like I said, Anne-Marie's going to find different ways to get it out, make it more user-friendly, include some videos in there, things like that. So what are your thoughts in terms of the things that we really need, the message we really need to get out to the public?
I have thoughts.
Go ahead, Tim, and then we'll, go ahead, since you're, go
yeah,
ahead.
So I mean, like, I think I brought up last time, I would love the idea of like a really quick video that just present, you know, like 5 minutes or less type video that presents in some, you know, compelling way where Franklin, like using DESE data, where Franklin spending, how Franklin spending compares to mm-hmm. other districts in Massachusetts and even comparable districts in Massachusetts. Just to put some context around those numbers, because I think that like the per pupil number is what I'm getting at, like that specifically, because I think the numbers are otherwise like really just, I, for me, and I work with numbers all the time, they're hard to interpret outside of context. So mm-hmm. I find that per pupil context really helpful. I think the idea of a video that presents that could be interesting. And then the other idea that I had would be, and I'm sure this would not be that difficult, and somebody, either Anne-Marie or somebody in the community, has these skills to create an interactive dashboard that people can click on that shows Franklin's, using the DESE data, Franklin's spending relative to the other districts in Massachusetts by category. So people could, you know, click on the different categories, yeah, and see what, you know, simply see like the rankings, just make it in a, not like an overwhelming, you know, millions of data points format, but more so just like you click a category, you know, and then you see 75th percentile, 90th percentile, whatever. Like, I feel like that context is helpful, and it's, you know, public data. And so it's, hopefully people would interpret it as being, you know, valid and unbiased, and, you know, mm-hmm. that's a big part of the story, I think.
Yeah. Jen?
I mean, at this point, I don't really have anything because we haven't started the discussion yet. So I think that until we start to have the discussion, I don't know what would be helpful information to portray.
Okay, Sarah, I'd like to see kind of the whole portrait of a graduate, what our vision is, you know, and sort of in really making a huge deal about what we see is what our kids in the 21st century are going to need. What are the things that we have this big vision for? And then the kind of things in the budget that would support that we need, maybe that haven't been there, you know, like we look at this and we can earmark what does in some of the categories, because I think people need to see that vision. They need to see what it is we aspire to, and then how we want the budget to match up to that. So I don't know how we do it, but something that we keep getting that vision out to the public, you know, and that this is what we, you know, what we stand for and what we want and why it's so important, you know, that we, to keep our kids competitive, you know. So I think for me, that would be a big thing, a compelling thing to have, keep getting that out to the public.
I think that's a very abstract concept for people. So I think I would align more with Tim's suggestions around the numbers and what each number represents and the allocation and what it goes to.
Yeah.
I think people need to make a connection between where their dollars go. I think that that's an important connection to make for the value piece. I think that Portrait of a Learner or Graduate is great. It's a concept. It's an ideology that we all strive for with those characteristics. It's not tangible, and I think it's too abstract for the community to grasp. And that,
I agree. But I think, how do we make it? How do we make it tangible? I guess that's it. What does it? What? How do you make? Take that vision and make it tangible, I guess. And I don't know if that's possible. I'm just throwing out my idea on that one. It's just, how do you, what does that look like? What do we need to make that, what tangible things do we make that? If we want kids to be effective communicators, what do we need? What do we need, like in the English department at the high school? Do we need more English teachers? Do we need, when we want kids to be socially confident, self, you know, learners, what does that mean in terms of counselors? If we're going to deal with sort of all the emotional issues that are coming, if this is what we want for our kids, what does it look like in dollar amounts? Sort of matching the vision to the number somewhere in there. I mean, I think maybe there's room for both. I don't know. I'm just saying that I think, without a doubt, I think we have to get the facts out. We have to get the, you know, all of the data that Tim talked about has to be in there, you know, so.
I think there's room in the document to use the Portrait of a Graduate as kind of a aspirational piece, a motivating piece, and then making sure that we're tying the tangible components to that vision and making sure that there's alignment there. But the tangible pieces, you know, need to demonstrate where, you know, very concretely where the funding is going to support those outcomes.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing too, Sarah, I think you've done a good job of doing it, because one of the things we keep hearing at town council is that we're not being creative at saving money, you know, and I think it's really important, particularly with all the special ed programs that you've brought back and, you know, combining the teaming at the middle level and somewhere mitigation, you know, what's been done to save money, you know, I think that's a crucial thing too.
Are there like working team meetings with Anne Marie on this kind of stuff? Because the reason why I'm asking is when I say I have something in my head like that I think would, you know, if I were to talk to a creative person, they would be able to bring it to life. Like the storyline I could talk to. And then, you know, I think somebody with the creativity could help, you know, animate that or, you know, turn that into some sort of a flow. But what I feel like I'm not, I feel like I would have to communicate that to somebody like Anne-Marie or somebody who's like creating that for them to say, oh, I get, you know, I get the story you're trying to tell. And yeah, we could maybe pull it together this way. So is there some kind of like,
well, can't we invite her to, yeah, invite her to our meet? We'll just add Anne-Marie to our meeting and have that. That would be great. Then you can talk together and have her here and we can kind of talk through. So that would be possible, right, Sarah, to have Anne-Marie come?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a good idea.
I can also tell you that Anne-Marie have had multiple conversations. We already have a draft of a video that's out there in at least in slideshow format. It's not animated just yet. So some of the things that you just talked about are already included in that.
Yeah.
So there's a start.
Good.
Yeah. It might cover it off. Like I would like, I almost feel like I would like to just kind of like ramble and say like, hey, here's what I think the story is, because like I'm coming at, like I put myself in the shoes of a lot of community members, I think, where, you know, prior to being on the school committee, like the numbers that are associated with the budget were just so, like it was impossible for me to interpret them out of context. And now I understand them a little bit more, but the numbers are so big. It's like, how do you, like, as a community member, like it's easy, I think, to jump to the assumption that there's got to be room for savings when the budget is 50 million, 60 million, 70 million. Like, you know, like how do you? And so that's kind of like this, the evolution that I went through was I came in feeling like, yeah, I'm sure like I'm going to find a million places where people can save money. And then like, you know, you learn other things about, you know, where we rank relative to the other districts. And so I think that, you know, helping people follow that similar evolution could at least get people on the same page. Now, people may decide to do, you know, go in different directions, but if everybody is aligned with here are the facts, then I think that's a great place to go from.
Sounds good.
That's exactly the story, which basically starts with people think that $65 million is such a huge number. We got all this money.
Yeah. But
the reality is here's how much we spend per pupil. Here's where it goes. And so that basically is the story. And here's how we compare to other districts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome.
Of our size and spending.
Yeah.
So I'll move it to the front burner.
Good one. Do we need to put, what do you think about putting things that we've lost over the years? Is that important information? I would ask the subcommittee, do we want to put in there the kind of the programs over the years we've had to lose, you know, that we used to have, or is that not, what do you think about that?
So I do. I think it is important. And I know community members have brought it up in prior meetings, at least I've heard it, where people have said, hey, once you lose, because this came up when mm-hmm. the music, the arts was on yeah. the table, like, well, once you lose something, you're not going to get it back, or it's yeah. really, really difficult to get it back. Also, you know, if people align on this idea that there's some level of underfunding that exists, that issue, you know, compounds year after year. And so it's like, okay, well, if we don't do something different, the cuts are going to almost here's what's going to come next. Like at some point the arts are going to be on the table again, and then athletics are going to be on the table. And then I think that's helpful information.
Yeah. Someone brought up too, I'm not sure who it was at one of the meetings, is that people, some have the, maybe some people in the community, the assumption that school is like it was 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, but just the dimension of technology and the cost of technology in schools is somehow getting that across. Is, I mean, it isn't just, you know, programs, it's infrastructure, it's the enormous amount of funding that has to go just to keep the technology in place. I don't know who brought it up, but I remember it resonated with me that would be important information. It's just not your, you know, the schools of old. It's changed so dramatically, you know, and the issues around social emotional well-being, how complicated kids' lives are today, and the needs are so great, you know, and what we need to do to support them, you know, that it's, I'm not sure who said it, but I just remember it resonated with me, you know.
Yeah, Madam Chair. I'll acknowledge saying that in the community relations meeting last week.
Oh, okay. That was it. Thanks, Steve.
That was a suggestion of an approach.
Yeah, and thank you. I knew I heard it somewhere. I just couldn't remember. I couldn't remember where.
I think it can still tie in with what you're already discussing in terms of the video, because you still have the question, and at least one other school committee member also has the question around multiple people in the classrooms. Right. Well, multiple people do go into the classroom, but they're not there all the time. It's the one teacher and an ESP, perhaps. And then the other support specialists come in for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes to deliver the service to this student, that student, and then leave. So there may be a whole host of people in and around the classroom, but the concept of so many people in the classroom needs to be addressed as well.
Yeah. Thanks.
For clarification, are we doing a consult model for co-teaching?
What do you mean by that, Jen?
Like that inning and out? I was under the assumption that our co-teaching model was fully staffed with two.
I think it depends on the level. So at the high school, it is fully staffed with two. At the elementary level, it is a little more fluid than that.
And then the middle school is more of a cohort model?
in the middle school, it's a little bit more like the elementary school. We don't have like co-teaching pairs that are together permanently.
Okay, so just at the high school.
Yep.
Trying to think. I'm trying to think of anything else. Do we want to put unfunded mandates in? Oh, that was one of the things that was in there already anyway, I think.
That's a tough one. Like, I think that phrase, and I know.
Okay.
I know it's a trendy phrase, but I think people get a little annoyed with it because.
Okay. Sounds good.
I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's difficult. I think it's really difficult because and especially when we quantify it, it's really hard. So much of what we do feels underfunded anyway, at least from the state perspective, especially knowing what we know about like the Student Opportunity Act and how they were trying to increase in certain key areas because it wasn't an adequate funding model. So I think it's hard. I think it's hard. There's so many regulations that we're responding to. So it feels like everything.
I feel like falls into that before, like in a general committee meeting where someone had asked poor Miriam to identify the, you know, non-funded mandates. And I thought, I don't know what it looked like. And I can't remember the response, but.
It was a challenge.
Yeah.
We tried our best to try to put something together, but it was hard.
I do think, and I don't know who said it, I do think the piece about showing ways that we were creative in programming, staffing, resources, I think those all lend to that conversation as well.
Yeah.
Without kind of teetering on the line of defensive, but just using information to create perspective. And this is a conversation I try to stay away of because it's my area, but I think the other piece is the significant jump that we've had in out-of-district placements over the years.
Yeah, that's big.
And I will, you know.
The other piece in that similar arena is with the teacher contract and the steps and lanes, because you have made changes to that over time and it's considerably reduced from what it was, and that really hasn't been publicly explained, especially given the restructuring that the fire and police department have done. People are looking for the comparison on your side, and effectively you've been doing the same thing over the years, a little bit at a time, but you've been doing it.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
Yeah,
maybe a little bit more subtle than what fire and police have done, but you know, we have done things which in some cases have been a little detrimental, particularly in that bachelor's lane, in terms of capping out at B6. It has created some challenges. And this year in particular, there were two people that were difficult to hire because of that that cap.
Yeah. We don't have to. When would we anticipate getting this a deadline for this? In case people have other ideas that we think about over the next, like say, few days or something, after people have more time to think about it, what would be the? When would we anticipate? Would you think wanting to get this out?
I think closer to the budget presentation. So I think that we've got a little bit of time, you know, to Jen's point around there's still some conversations and some development to happen. So this can be, you know, kind of the background information behind the scenes, but then adding pieces related to FY22.
That's good. Yeah.
As we sort of work with the admin team to put that together along with the school committee priorities that you shared.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know if it's possible, maybe highlighting some of those areas that were really committed to funding and providing some more in-depth justification for those line items. I think a lot of times you know, overall, just kind of presenting an increase of 3.8% gives a great generic kind of overview of it. But I think maybe honing in on specific line items and saying, like, this is why this line item is where it is and why we need the fully funding for it is because of X, Y, and Z, you know, and really giving some strong justification as instead of just maintaining technology, you know, maintaining staffing, increasing whatever, those are really kind of open-ended statements. And I think if we can justify with a little more detail those line items that we truly need fully funded, it would be helpful as well. And again, it's that fine line between justification and defensive. I don't think that it should be a, you know, a dissertation defense, but I do think that if we could lend some justification with hard data about why that line item is necessary at the point that we put it at, it would be helpful for people.
It's good.
I think that makes sense, particularly this year. I think there's just, there's just, I think, some really big things happening that'll end up kind of shaping education in the long term. And there are some things that we absolutely must commit to, and they might be things that wouldn't necessarily have been supported as much in the past, or may have been first things to go. Like the digital learning integrationists come to mind, just in terms of maintaining that support after teachers have made such, I think, fundamental shifts in their instruction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we had made there had been a large issue around consistency across the curriculum and how important that was at all the elementary schools, and then the need for perhaps more curriculum people in the budget, you know, to justify, because that had come out of, that had been a concern back when we had done parent surveys a few years ago in some of our community relations coffees. And I know it's been brought up at in the superintendent evaluation that really is important, but we need people to make that happen, you know, so that the fact that we're really understaffed in curriculum people compared to, as Jim would say, other districts, that's a glaring piece that we really need to focus in on. But that will get woven in anyway, but it just reminded me of that when we were talking, you know, that was something that was really important, you know. Justification, you know, it would be a good way to justify that one, because people need to see why we need it, you know.
We had talked last year about those instructional coaches, interventionists, the different, you know, I know that you had done a nice job of sending out a kind of a spreadsheet, because depending on the level of the building, it looks different, and they're part-time, full-time, and the titles. And I think you told me, and I can't remember, that those are embedded in the contract, that they would have to be part of that discussion to realign those, or was I mistaken?
We have instructional stipends in the contract for, you know, there's multiple different stipends in the contract that relate to kind of curriculum and instruction, but they can be reviewed and, you know, kind of examined and thought about a bit differently. You know, and we have, you know, we've talked about Joyce's retirement and that had kind of been talked about previously. And I think there's, it's becoming more concretely clear, especially this year with the pandemic and the VLA, and bringing together students from different elementary schools together, just how much work there is to do in terms of bringing, getting to more alignment across the elementary curriculum. So that's something that's definitely being carefully considered as part of the budget in terms of how we go forward and what structures we look to put in place in particular to improve that situation.
Good. So to have more like of a like K-3 that handles K-2, you know, K-1 and 2 that would handle across the building. So there's that lateral piece that's happening.
Yes. Yeah. And the principals are on board with it as well. I think they would like to see more alignment. They recognize that more alignment would mean that people are working smarter, not harder. And so it's a long-term it's a long-term thing. It's not going to, you know, change overnight. But as we think about bringing, for example, a new set of math materials on board, that's going to help shape math across all of the schools. We need to do the same with literacy and English language arts. So there's a couple opportunities in the near future and then long term to get more together, especially at the elementary level.
I attended a math, not this year obviously, but last year at Parmenter, and that would have been a fantastic, you know, it was math morning, and mm-hmm. he did a good job of facilitating that, and it was interactive and it was great. And then that would have been great if that was then just delivered and implemented across all the buildings.
Was that a visitor? Was that a like an outside consultant that came in to do math morning?
It was, I can't remember his name.
Oh, Mr. Kelly, Brian Kelly.
Maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
And he ran it, and he, you know, there was different activations, yeah. But like he put all the thought and hard work into making that a great morning for kids, and it would be wonderful if he could have taken that and then shared it across all of the buildings.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, families are all engaging in that same level, and the work is less for him because he's done the setup and the implementation. You know what I mean? The hard work, putting it all together, he doesn't have to do five times, six times across the buildings.
Right, right.
And it was great.
Good. Anything else people want to see? Because I know we're getting close to. Tim, anything else that you, did you get a chance to say everything you wanted to say?
I did.
Okay. Jen? Can't hear you. Jen, we can't hear you.
You're not muted, but we seem to have lost your audio. We
can't hear you, Jen.
Did I freeze?
Oh, you're okay.
Yeah, there you go. You're back.
I love my Acer. No. So the first one, am I okay?
Yeah, yes. We can hear you now.
Perfect. So the first one is reading instruction. So obviously I've been, you know, I've expressed my concern about reading instruction in K-1-2 relative to the pandemic from the end of last year, beginning of this year. So I do have significant concerns about reading coming up next year. So, you know, from a selfish standpoint, I would love to see something in the budget to address reading deficits in those lower grades that we may see as a result of the pandemic. Because again, I talk about this all the time and people don't want to hear me anymore, but you know, the indicators are real, right? So if your foundational reading skills are not intact, K-1, 2, 3, you're looking at lifelong learning challenges and employment and, you know, that kind of stuff. So for me, that's a huge one for me that I would like to see something in the budget around what are those, recoupment, preventative, mm-hmm. whatever it looks like in the area of reading in those K-1, 2 grades.
Oh, we lost you again. It's just it cut out for some reason.
Can you?
Now?
Yep.
Now you're back.
I don't know why. Okay, so just give me the thumbs down if you can't hear me.
Okay.
the other the thing you might try is turn your video off while you're speaking.
Oh, okay, I can do that, Steve. God, you should be on this committee, Steve, not me. Is that better?
Yeah, we can hear you.
So the other one that I know that we're in the early conversations about pool testing, but I'm going to tell you one of my huge concerns with pool testing. Well, I have several, but I'll just start with one, is the financial piece of it. So I think that is something we need to look at. I think it's probably going to impact this year's budget, but I'm afraid that we're going to have to kind of revamp this year to make up for those costs. So I don't want to see it impact some of our services for next year, because we have to make up the money that it's going to cost if we potentially go with pool testing, because I know it's, you know, 6 weeks sounds great. You know, thank you, Desi. But then what?
Just like following up on Jen's thought on the pool testing, like, I think it's a new concept for a lot of people in the community. I don't pay attention to a ton of the Facebook stuff, but there was a sizable discussion on it either today or yesterday. And you can tell that there's definitely a contingent that's not sold on the idea of allowing their kids to be in the pool. So just keep that in mind, that that's something that, you know, we'll probably need to get a better pulse on with the community.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not entirely surprising. I think what other communities have seen is, you know, kind of increasing rates of participation over time. Not that anybody's at this for very long. I think many districts who've started it have only been doing it for a couple weeks themselves, but they've seen an increased amount of participation over time as people have seen how the testing has worked. But it is costly. It certainly is costly.
If there's new federal stimulus, it looks like there's going to be a significant amount devoted to testing. So maybe that will help too, you know, down the line.
Yeah, we can use it towards testing. It would if we funded testing for the rest of the year, it would probably take up about half of that money. Mm-hmm. And that money is able to be spent over the next to September of 23, September 23. Almost sounds forever away.
Mm-hmm. 27
months. Mm-hmm. Which is different than the CVRF money where we had, you know, months to spend it.
Which has also since been extended.
Which has been, yeah, right.
Just want to see any final thoughts, because we've got about 5 minutes left. I don't want to cut anyone off. Jen, Tim, anything else? Guess not. Sarah, anything? Miriam? Tim, anything? Jen?
No, I'm good.
Okay, just checking.
I'm on a separate topic, really quickly. I just wanted to get the committee's input on refunds for lunch balances for seniors. If you recall, last year, we refunded anything over $10 for students who were graduating. And if they had a sibling, we transferred the money automatically to the sibling. And so we would look to continue that practice, but we would need school committee approval because it's against policy, and last year's approval was only for 1 year. I anticipate refunds would be roughly in the area of $6,000.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're not collecting money anymore, right, Miriam?
I'm sorry?
They're not still able to put money on the card because of the...
No, they can't put any more money on the card, and all lunches are free this year.
Right.
So there really isn't an opportunity for seniors to spend that money, or anybody else for that matter, to spend the money they have on account, which is why we would transfer it to a younger sibling, or I would suggest refunding it.
Yeah, the only question I would have is, I'm optimistic that come April and May we'll be back in, so will they still have an opportunity to utilize those funds for, you know, discretionary purchases beyond the lunch?
Certainly. If we have the opportunity to let them spend it, yes.
Okay.
So I can hold off on presenting you with a resolution to vote on it.
So this would be, the resolution wouldn't really take impact till the end of the year.
Yes.
Okay.
I have a thumbs up for me on it.
Yeah. Jen, what do you think? I mean, it sounds good to me. Jen?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Just wanted to double check. Very good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, so anything else? So I'll send out an email just to lock in some dates for March, and maybe the last week of February, first week of March. And anything else? Then no. All right. That being said, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn. Tim?
I always wait for Denise. I'm like waiting for Denise. I'll make a motion.
Okay, Tim. Second?
Second.
Second, Jen. All right. Okay, so all those in favor, we have a motion and a second to adjourn. Tim?
Yes.
And Jen?
Yes.
And Ann? Yes. Okay. Meeting adjourned, and I'll send out that email.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks everybody.
Everyone. Thank you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.